bitch please.
Oh, bitch please my ass. You want a sandwich?
Dig that.
Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man, a devil. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your way.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. Today's special guest is Michael Bryant of Bradshaw and Bryant Law Firm. Mike is a huge power attorney in the state of Minnesota. He is also a large sports fan. Plus, Mike is a connoisseur of radio and podcasts, broadcasting. But there's another reason why I'm having Mike on, and you'll find out the reason why after this short break on the JB's Low Tech Podcast. Hello, and I'm here once again to speak on behalf of JB'sGloveRepair.com. If you're a ball player or have a ball player in the house and are in need of repairs to your glove or maybe to your game pants or practice pants, I'm the person to seek out at JB'sGloveRepair.com, and that's JAYBEES GloveRepair.com. I'll take care of all your glove repair needs, and also I can remove stubborn stains from such game pants or practice pants, those nasty clay stains. So once again, I can be reached at JB'sGloveRepair.com.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Welcome back. I think I have our guest today. Mike, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Mike, this is Michael Bryant, as I said in the introduction, of Bradshaw and Bryant Law Firm. He is a high-power Minnesota attorney, but he's also a big sports fan and also
absolutely,
and also a connoisseur of radio and podcasts. And also,
oh, yeah, I listen to a ton of them.
Yeah, you. I see you commenting on Twitter a lot about different podcasts or radio broadcasts. But there was another reason why I was bringing Mike on today, and now I will share why I'm bringing Mike on. I had made some off-the-cuff comment on Twitter, and I don't even recall what the comment was, Mike, but your response to me was, and it had something, I think my comment was something like, yeah, I'll start my own podcast, or I should start my own podcast. And your response to me was something like, do you have something to say? Do you recall that comment, sir?
I do.
Well, I guess I have something to say and a lot of things to say, but I didn't take that.
Absolutely.
I want to make sure you understand. I didn't take that negatively. I took that as positive motivation, and I want to thank Mike Bryant for being my motivation to get this podcast up off the ground. So thank you, sir.
Well, that's wonderful. It wasn't meant as a negative shot or anything. It was just, I think that's the key, is that, you know, if you got something to say, and, you know, I know that reading a lot of your posts, particularly your posts on Facebook over the last, 6 months, you've had a lot of comments on all sorts of issues. That I think are all really, really, really good and need to be said.
Well, I really appreciate that. So my first question will be an oddball question, as I like to throw people off. You advertise heavily on Minnesota radio and podcasts. Why do you use radio over other forms?
Radio sticks in people's heads. It is something that, you know, since, you know, a lot of people listen to it in their car. They don't have the ability to change it as easily as they would on TV commercials. And it works. You know, it's, I go back to a guy named Jack Trout, And I read a number of his books, and they were all towards radio advertising. And over time, I found that it's worked really well. And it's amazing how many times taglines from the commercial are the reason why people call. You hear them call, and they're like, well, I'm calling because I don't want to sign anything without talking to a lawyer. Or, you know, I called because I wanted to, you know, ask you questions. I knew it was free. And so, you know, based upon that, it works.
Okay. That was one of the things I was just wondering about. Another thing is, and I think I may know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Why such a connoisseur of radio and podcasts?
Well, I end up in my car a lot. So I drive about 50,000 miles a year. And so I end up listening to lots of things. And then, podcasts have... Well, the best thing about podcasts, well, like take your podcast from last week. The person you interviewed, that's probably not somebody I would have any contact with or hear very often. And it gives me a really great opportunity to hear from lots of people and a lot of different things that I just normally wouldn't, you know, aren't part of my normal life. And so podcasts have really opened my world up for all sorts of things. And that's the thing I've really liked about, you know, I like interviews, and I like hearing different people's thoughts on all sorts of stuff.
Well, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure. So I'm going to get into another reason why I asked Mike on. Mike, what type of law do you practice, and how can you help people, or how do you help people?
Sure. Yeah, we practice, our main area is plaintiff's personal injury. We represent people who are injured through no fault of their own. So people are in car accidents, people are hurt by products, people that have been injured overall. I also have always had a small percentage of our practice being criminal defense. I started doing a lot of criminal work when I first started with the Bradshaw Law Office many years ago, back in 91. And I've always kept, as I've grown, I've always kept at least one criminal lawyer. Now we have two other criminal lawyers, so there's three of us, including me, that still do criminal cases. So we represent people who have been accused of crimes. I, about 10 years ago, got involved in a lot of cases with Jeff Anderson. So I've grown my practice as far as working with people, survivors, people who have been, who are survivors of sexual abuse. And so I've done a lot of work there. And I think, you know, we help people by, you know, taking the phone call, explaining them their rights, and then once they hear their rights, you know, if they want to hire us, they do, and if they don't, then at least we've given them a chance to hear what it is that can be done for them or not done for them. You know, I end up turning down lots of cases either because we can't help them or there's no case, they're under Minnesota law, and I think we help with at least giving people that advice. Sometimes they don't like it, but that's the advice we give them.
Yeah, you always seem like a straight shooter, so...
I try to be.
Well, myself, I didn't know you had gotten into criminal law. I knew about...
Yeah, back in 91, I'd worked for 3 years as a law clerk for Susan Grossman Holton, so I had a background in personal injury. But in 91, when I joined John Bradshaw, he represented a lot of motorcycle riders, and for whatever reason, the police would tend to give them all sorts of tickets. And so I started doing criminal work, and I've always done a percentage of criminal work. I've been involved in a couple. I did a murder trial up in Alexandria years ago, and I've been involved in a lot of different criminal cases. And then I've had, you know, a criminal lawyer work for me pretty much ongoing. I think, yeah, we have two now that do criminal work, so there's three of us in the office overall.
And I know you may not be able to get too in detail, but are you doing any, I think you're doing some representation of people who have been harmed by the, and I'm saying this as a Catholic myself, by the handling of abuse by priests of young children.
Yeah, I've represented a lot of different people with the window being open from 2013 to 2016 in Minnesota. I was involved in a lot of cases around the state, particularly those in St. Cloud Diocese and in the New Ulm Diocese, and then we've had other clients in other areas. I'm involved in the legislation that's hopefully going to be pushed in North Dakota, so I might be involved in a number of cases up in North Dakota. And then South Dakota hopefully will follow. South Dakota has a couple of very tragic stories. There's a school that was open where a lot of kids were abused, and there's a number of women that go to the legislature in South Dakota each year with the intent of trying to get the window open. And what a window is, it's in a period that's opened up that allows people who were sexually abused to go back and make claims that they could have been made as kids, but they didn't for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, it's like, again, like I said, I was raised Catholic, and I've always been disappointed in the church's handling or doing nothing or hiding the facts that this had gone on for decades.
Yeah. I was born, I was raised a Catholic. I was an altar boy. So I've spent lots of time in the Catholic Church. If you go back when it first started and the stories first broke in the 80s with Mitch Garibaldi and then Jeff Anderson back then, and you'd ask them, there's no way they thought 40 years later they'd still be dealing with these cases. They really thought this must be a limited thing and this must not be as deep, and it's turned into this incredible. It's scary. And the more we look into it and the more names that we add and the more stories we're told, it's scary in how that the church has never, ever identified it.
Yeah, I've never understood, and now I think, has the church officially filed for bankruptcy?
The overall church hasn't. Dioceses have. And it's an interesting bankruptcy because in all the cases, they have the money. The bankruptcies are really so that they can close out the chapter so that if a new window gets open. So, like in California, the window's been open 4 times. So the diocese, by going bankrupt, such as in Minnesota, that we've had St. Cloud, we've had Minneapolis-St. Paul Archdiocese, Duluth, New Ulm, have all gone bankrupt. And basically, and Winona will go bankrupt once it gets figured out how they're going to do that. And that's just to prevent them from having to face these claims again. Now, if there's future claims, we'll be able to bring those claims, or if we're able to show fraud. Now, what's interesting about it is anytime they go bankrupt, in order to protect themselves, they have to admit all their liabilities. So they have to. That's why one of the things that we see is the list of the accused that they have. And this is people that they've determined have there's enough evidence to indicate that they're credibly accused. That list always grows because they want to make sure they cover all those liabilities, with the worst example being a bishop in New Mexico that they went all the way to the New Mexico Supreme Court fighting, saying that, you know, he didn't abuse anybody. There's no case against him. Then when they went bankrupt in that diocese, they put him on the list, and they said, oh, yeah, we found a box downstairs that showed us evidence that we didn't know existed. So, you know, it's a mixed bag as far as the success of it, but it does get people on the list. And there's nothing like being around a survivor when the person who is the perpetrator in their case goes on the list, and they finally know that they've gotten justice in the sense of that they've been believed and their story's been heard. And that's really one of the most gratifying part of what we do, that and protecting future kids so that future kids aren't abused by these people.
Yeah. Who knows how much damage has been caused by the lack of control by the church. It's, like I said, one of the things I struggle with as a Catholic. It's probably one of the reasons why I'm not a practicing Catholic, but
sure.
I don't deny my heritage. So another reason why I want to have Mike on, kind of lift us out of this conversation that we were just having, because it's a pretty deep one, was also the fact that you are a sports fan. You grew up a Red Sox fan and probably a Patriots fan, I believe.
Yep. I moved to Rhode Island. My parents got divorced in 1973. I went to my first game at Fenway Park actually the summer before in 72, and I've been a lifelong Red Sox fan since that time. My grandfather never saw him win the World Series and was just an incredible Red Sox fan. Actually was buried with his Red Sox jacket. And then the Patriots, I remember playing Grogan and Vataha in the back, in the backyard. So it's been nice to have all the wins, but boy, I went through a lot of losses in the 70s and 80s to get there.
Yeah, and for the Red Sox to break that curse, of course, they beat my club, the St. Louis Cardinals.
That is true. That is true. Well, we've had between the Cardinals and the Blues.
Yes.
We've had some classic competitions between those two teams. Well, I still every once in a while will taunt you with the Bobby Orr goal.
Yes. Yes, that famous pitcher.
You and I both share that we were both goaltenders in hockey.
Right.
So we both enjoy that stick as you get stripped. So.
But that famous photo of Bobby Orr flying through the air as Noel Picard tripped him after scoring the overtime winner. See, that's how much of a Blues fan I am, that I know all the participants in that play. Assist went to Derek Sanderson. Orr scored. Noel Picard was the man that tripped him, and Glenn Hall was the man in the goal. And if you ever hear the actual broadcast of it, the voice of the commentator nationally, it was a man by the name of Dan Kelly, who actually was the St. Louis
Blues. Dan Kelly, yep.
He was the actual St. Louis Blues announcer, but you couldn't tell.
Oh, okay.
You couldn't tell by the way he announced that goal that his own spirit was being crushed at the same time, because the team that he worked for and loved had just lost the Stanley Cup. But he was such a professional. He, you know, he made it. He did his job, and he celebrated the game of hockey. But then, almost 50 years later, the Blues got even. So I'm a happy man.
Yep, that is true.
I mean, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, many years later, one of the people that I worked with, his son was the trainer for the Blues.
Okay.
And so I was trainer for the Blues, so I actually wore Mike Lutz's goalie pants, one of the pairs that he had. I wore those for a number of years. I bet you I still got them. But, yeah, Mike Lutz, the Blues goalie, because those blue ones that I got from him that had extra padding on the inside of the leg, which at that point was a huge deal.
Right.
So I've had I like the Blues, you know, not as much as my Bruins, but like you said, they did get their revenge, and I was sad about that, but I was happy for Blues fans that such as yourself who got that Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, 52 years in the making.
Yep.
The other trivial point of that was Boston and St. Louis are the two cities that have faced each other in all four major sports championships.
Oh, yeah, because you'd have the Rams. You'd have that's right. You'd have the Rams that year. They were favored against the Patriots.
Yes.
And then baseball, hockey, and then basketball. Ooh, Celtics versus the St. Louis
Hawks.
St.
Louis Hawks.
Hawks. That's, oh, wow.
That's
holy
before
cow,
they...
who was on that team?
I believe Bob Pettit was on that team.
Bob Pettit.
Yeah, Bullet
okay.
Bob
wow.
Pettit. But
Bullet Bob Pettit. Huh.
Yeah, they before team moved to the Atlanta and became the Atlanta Hawks, which they are now. They were the St.
Okay.
Louis Hawks. Yeah. So
okay.
The only
they need Connie Hawkins to play for that team.
Right. that would have been, you know, one of those sports oddities that rarely happens, where the player's name is part of the team that he plays. Well, I'm gonna take a short break here, Mike. But the thing I'm gonna want you to do for me is to give and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but kind of give a commercial for Bradshaw and Bryant and any contact information that you would like to leave.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, Bradshaw and Bryant. We can be found on the web at minnesotapersonalinjury.com, and our phones are 800-770-7008, 800-770-7008. The phones are answered 24 hours, and we get back to people as quick as we can. We talk to people with all sorts of claims, so it's not, you know, I always tell people, if you got something there, you got a question, and it's a legal question, I'd rather talk to people than have them not know the answer out there if I can help them. I was president of the trial lawyers for the state, so was my partner Joe Crumley. So we know lots of other lawyers, so if we get a call on something that we don't do, we don't do very much medical malpractice, so there's lawyers that I refer that to. But we'll help you get to the right person. There's a lot of people with what's called class action cases that'll call us, that I'll get them to the right lawyers that I know that I think will make a difference for them, versus just being one of the one of the people lost in the crowd. So, you know, that's what we do, plaintiff's personal injury and criminal defense. And if you need us, it's 800-770-7008.
And do you handle cases outside of the state of Minnesota?
Sometimes. I'm involved in a couple. I'm involved in a national network, and usually I can find a really good lawyer for somebody in that state. But there are cases I'm involved in. I'm involved in a really big case. It's down in Louisiana that I'm working on. And so it varies. But for the most part, I tend to just be all over state of Minnesota. I've been in all but 9 counties in the state, and I've tried cases in all but 12 counties.
Okay. Can you give that phone number again?
It is 800-770-7008.
All right. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back, and I'm with my special guest, Mike Bryant of Bradshaw & Bryant Law Firm. We've talked about law cases, and we've talked about radio advertising, and also the type of law that he practices. But I want to go more in depth with sports, because I also notice
sure.
You do a lot of commenting on things on Twitter about sports, especially horse racing. Are you really into horse racing?
It's been taking up my time. For a while, that was the only sport that was on. And I grew up going to Ruidoso Downs with my dad in New Mexico. And so I've always liked horse racing. But it was kind of the only thing on and kept my interest. And I've learned a lot. And I like the math of it also. There's a certain math element to it that's been of a lot of interest.
Okay. Do you, and if you don't want to answer this question, I totally understand. Do you do actual betting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't do a lot. Every once in a while I get involved in some of the pick fives or pick six that are a little better, so I'll do it with a little bit bigger ticket. But for the most part, it's not too big. And there's always another race. I mean, holy cow. It's like, you know, one of the things that's like every week there's something else and there's another horse and, you know, those things. And so there'll be certain horses I like a lot. I was watching steeplechase racing this morning from England, and there's a couple horses there, Paisley Park and Put the Kettle On, that I like kind of watching. And it's been an interesting world to watch and to see, but it never ends. And so, you win, you lose, move on to the next one. So, it's and I've learned a lot.
So what would you say would be the sporting event that you have to watch for sport?
Oh, the Red Sox. Red Sox. If the Red Sox are on, I love watching the Red Sox. I mean, last year was probably the closest I've ever come to not watching them since maybe when I was busy in law school. I mean, they actually had some pitchers on the mound last year that I had no idea who they were. And the idea that I didn't know somebody is crazy with the Sox, because, you know, often I'll know, you know, guys in Double A and Single A. But last year was a weird year for that. But overall, I love watching the Sox. I live and die with them. And, you know, they'll still be, you know, if they'll lose a game, I'll still be bummed about it for a couple of days, even a regular season game.
I'm the same way with the baseball Cardinals and the St. Louis Blues. They're they're on TV up here and I can watch, I'll sit down and watch. I'll do the same with, you know, with my long affiliation with the University of Minnesota with some Gopher sports, hockey and football mainly. Watch a little basketball. I'm not a huge hoops fan as much as I used to be as a kid. The Clem years,
I was there during the Clem years, and the team that made their run, I just loved that team. I knew that team really well. My season tickets used to be 23 rows up, just kind of up from the bench, and I went to lots of games, and I really liked that team. I've off and on watched the Gopher football team. I've had season tickets a couple of times. My partner Joe Crumley's a really big hockey fan, so every once in a while I'll get tickets from him, and I'll go see the games. Beth is from North Dakota, so she's a big North Dakota fan, and so we go to those games on it off and on. And Gophers have kind of become sort of my team, although I grew up with Boston College, so I still always have an idea of what's going on with Boston College in hockey and in basketball and football.
Here's my second oddball question of the day. What do you think of quarterbacks?
What do I think of quarterbacks? We've had quarterbacks that I've liked a lot. You know, I mean, Brady, you know, I still think Brady's probably one of the biggest, the class of best quarterbacks I've ever seen in my lifetime. I grew up a huge Roger Staubach fan because my grandfather had seen him play for Navy and would tell me about that, and he saw John Kennedy at that game also.
Right.
So I was a big Roger Staubach fan for years. And overall, you know, I the year Randall Cunningham had here with the Vikings. I've liked watching quarterbacks, I guess. You know, I in fantasy football went with Lamar Jackson, which I'm still not sure off and on whether that was the greatest move this year. But I like quarterbacks.
Now, the reason why I asked that question, so it can lead me into one of my latest rants with people when talking about sports lately, which is teams in the NFL are destroying their programs over quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. Because they think they can build around a certain person. Yeah, yeah. There's a certain craziness about it because if you don't have a line and they get sacked a bunch of times, they don't last. Or if you don't have wide receivers, they got nobody to throw to. You know, it's been interesting to watch Tua this year because so many people let him slide. And I liked him in Alabama, but there's a big question with that hip injury.
Right.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. These teams that they're going crazy just so they can get a Joe Burrows or just so they can get a the kid from Clemson. Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it doesn't. So.
But by the name, his real name is William, so he could have gone by the name Bill Lawrence, but there's a famous actor who went by that name. So he went by his middle name, Trevor.
That is true.
And for me, it's even deeper. Watching these teams draft a quarterback and then try to have them produce, and when they don't produce, then they fire the coach and the general manager over that, then bring in new people, and then they try to do it. And when that doesn't work, then they get rid of the quarterback, the coach, and the GM. And it's just on and on. That cycle for some teams go on and on and on, where if they could take that same – to me, you take that same money, get an adequate quarterback, and put it into other places like your offensive line and your defensive line and your defensive backs, and have more of a whole team rather than this one guy trying to carry a whole team. And that's the thing that to me is so obvious – but then to these owners and whatnot, they can't grasp, and they rather keep going after the home run instead of hitting singles and building a winning team.
Yeah, well, you look, you know, a kid like Purdy from Iowa State or the kid from the Gophers is probably going to go, you know, much lower in the draft. But, I mean, they have as much upside, I think, than some of the big names that you're talking about. Jalen Hurt with Philadelphia. A lot of Philadelphia fans were bummed when they drafted him, but, boy, he looks good. And so, you know, and that was my I think my mistake in fantasy football is I don't know that spending a lot of money or spending a lot of a big pick on a number one quarterback, even if they're number one, in comparison to the overall level of quarterbacks, you know, you could get somebody later on that's either as good or fits your team better.
Yeah, I don't understand the mindset to keep chasing. Yeah, you may get lucky and get a, you know, Aaron Rodgers, who was actually drafted much lower than people thought. Or
absolutely.
You know, well, and you look, I just thought of this. You look at the top quarterbacks, Mahomes, Rodgers, the guy with the Seahawks. Why am I? I'm blanking his name.
Oh, Wilson.
Yeah,
Russell Wilson.
These are all people who were late first rounders or lower in the draft. You know,
Tom Brady. Brady was fifth round.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be about drafting a name. It should be about a fit. And in all those cases, they were a fit, and they've all been successful. Where you have these number one draft choices flame out one after another after another after another. I mean, you look at the Washington football team. I almost said their old nickname. and they drafted a young man out of Ohio State, Haskins, only because part of the reason was the owner's son played with him in high school. That's crazy. And then you hire a new coach and general manager, and the first thing they do is turn around and bench your number one draft choice because they figured out the kid can't play or can't get himself ready to play. You know, he doesn't put in.
Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't want to put in the work and the time to become that. And I think part of that is being around college football for 22 years. Those type of guys, after a while, have so much handed to them, they forget about the hard work it takes to continue to develop and stay that way. I mean, even the quarterback for the Saints,
Drew Brees,
yes, was a lower. You know, he was a mid.
Yep.
I think he was like a mid first round or lower. And those type guys, they remain hungry and they come in and they want to work and they want to, you know, be the first ones in and the last ones out of the building every day, whatnot. There's very few Peyton Mannings who are drafted high and keep the hunger and, you know, and want to work at what they and understand that they have to do that.
Yep, that is true. That is very, very true. I mean, even with Peyton Manning, I mean, his brother, you know, wasn't drafted as high, and he had a lot of success, unfortunately, against the Patriots, but he had a lot of success, you know. And so it's a tough position. I mean, and also, success in college isn't the same as success in pros. I mean, they're so much bigger. They're so much faster. They hit so much harder that there's guys that just, you know, like a running quarterback. I you know, they've created this kind of this protective shield around quarterbacks. But, boy, you know, I think, you know, Lamar or Mahomes or, you know, those guys are just close to one big hit, and that'll be the end of that.
Yeah, we saw that with our Robert Griffin III, who was –
Yep, exactly.
I think in some ways was abused by his coach by – they kept putting him out there, and he kept running the ball, and he kept running recklessly. And finally, you know, those guys get their shot in. They're going to break your body, you know. And
that is true.
And that's what happened to him. And
who's the best college players you were around?
That I was around? Oh.
Yeah.
I got to see Desmond Howard in college.
Yep.
My freshman year, Marcus Allen, USC.
Oh, wow.
USC came to Minneapolis to play the Gophers, and here's a funny story. At halftime, I think he only had 20 something yards at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the game, he had 200 and something yards rushing.
Yep. Yeah, I've read about that. I think. Yeah.
We celebrated a little bit too early in the locker room about holding him down. And he went off. He went off in the third and fourth quarters, and went over 200 yards Also, I was the lead student manager for the year Nebraska beat us 84-13, and that team was stacked. It had Tom Rathman.
Yep, that was a great team.
Yeah, had Tom Rathman as a fullback. Irving Fryer was a wideout.
That's right, Irving Fryer.
Right, Mike Rozier was a running back, and Turner Gill was the quarterback. Just loaded. And somebody's asked Tom Osborne why they kept pouring it on. Well, when you travel, you can only bring 60 to 70 players on a road trip. So even though you go to your second team at the time, which was probably a little bit better than our first team, they're about as or better, so it's kind of hard to stop them. You know, they scored 21 points a quarter. And we sat down because there's this sheet that the coaches get after the game, and it breaks down the game. So we sat down and took that sheet, because the coaches normally toss it and go home or whatever. We took that sheet and timed all of Nebraska's scoring drives and then averaged it out by the amount of plays, and their scoring drives were 13 seconds long.
Jeez. Wow.
Because it was run play, and then they would score on third down or score on first down, you know. And it was just and the really odd thing about it was Nebraska went three and out to start the game. The celebration began. My boss and my mentor Dick Mattson had this big red plastic baseball bat that he would wave on the sidelines to get the fans going. I don't know why he thought people were looking at him, but he's waving this bat and people getting fired up, and they went three and out and then never went three and out again the rest of the game. It was like, it was like watching a track meet with a football in somebody's hand. It was unbelievable. But, 40 year connection with that university. I mean, the guys I got to, I even had a hand in the recruitment of Lawrence Maroney, who went on and played for the Patriots. The University.
Yeah, played for the Patriots. Yeah, right. That's right.
He grew up in St. Louis, and his
his
high school vice principal just happened to be my brother. So when Mace went in to recruit him, Coach Glenn Mason, they started with my brother, and then they moved to Lawrence. And we were one of the few schools who said that you could remain a running back when he was recruited. The Big 12 schools that recruited him, because at the time Mizzou was still in the Big 12, and schools like Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and other schools, and there were some Big 10 schools like Illinois and I think Ohio State, all said, we see you as a strong safety or a linebacker. And in his heart of hearts, he wanted to be a running back. So, and in the St. Louis paper, they would publish the Maroney watch, and he would list his top five schools every week in order of which one he's more likely to go to. Minnesota never showed up in his top five ranking until the last week, and we were ranked fourth.
Wow.
So he kind of knew how to pull the wool over people's eyes too, because he claimed from the time he made the visit he knew he was coming to Minnesota, but he never told it. I think he may have told my brother, but he told my brother to keep it a secret. But in those 40 years, 22 of those were spent on football sidelines, but then there was other athletes.
Sure.
There's a young woman I'm trying to get on my podcast. Her name is Sarah Groenwagen, and she's she was an All-American pitcher for Gopher softball team. But she's
Of course.
Right. But she is also on the Canadian Olympic softball team. And so, and I want to talk to her about that. I mean, she's overcome a couple of health scares in her time. She's diabetic, number one. And number two, she had Guillain-Barré syndrome a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And it almost killed her. Or, no, not Guillain-Barré, Legionnaire disease.
Legionnaires. Okay.
Yeah. And it almost killed her.
Wow.
And
go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
So So during that time, you would have gotten to know Bill Crumley then?
Yes. Bill and I were...
Yeah, that's my partner. That's my partner, Joe Crumley's brother, or was his brother, I guess. Still his brother, but he's
right.
gone. That's Joe's brother. Yeah, Joe's younger brother.
Yeah, Bill was a student manager at one point also. Then he became a SID, Sports Information Director. And I think that is true. He did football, and then he wound up also doing Gopher baseball. But
he also did basketball.
Right. And unfortunately, we lost him one summer day in a swimming accident. He was out swimming. And he
from a boat.
Yeah. And he never came back up. But, no, he was the one.
The two, do you know the two great Gopher stories about him?
No.
He is the guy that in that Indiana game where Kevin Lynch was fouled out, he's the one who corrected the scorers and got the word to Clem that Lynch didn't have five fouls.
Uh-oh.
And Lynch went back in and then hit the shot that put him into overtime and then came up with a great overtime to win. So that was one of his stories. And then the second story is that he's the one, when Mason was going to miss the plane, back when you could do this, he's the one who drove the golf cart to get Mason to the plane to go to the bowl when Mason was going to be late.
Right.
So one day I go to a basketball game with Joe. He comes along. And he's like, oh, you probably want to meet my brother. And his brother comes up and meets us. I'm like, that's your brother? And so I told Joe the two stories about his brother that he didn't even know about. He had no idea his major role in Gopher history.
I didn't know those things about Bill.
Yeah.
When you mentioned your partner's name, I was going to ask, is there a chance he was related to Bill? But, yeah.
Yep.
But for years, my name, because I'm a letter award winner as a student manager, if you work 3 years with a team, you're considered part of the team and you get the letter. And I got that.
Sure.
I got that with football.
You got the rings, too.
Right. Well, those are all earned as a full-timer. But as a student manager, you get to earn a varsity letter just like the athletes do. Because you...
Sure.
You actually put in more time than the athletes do because you're there, you're there before and you're there after and you're there at other times. But for the longest time in the listing of letter award winners, my name was listed, but the word manager was never next to it. Bill corrected that, and I always was angry at Bill because I said, Bill, people thought I was a player. And actually, I said this in an earlier podcast. I got to run scout team for the football team 1 week, and so I kind of earned that varsity letter on the field also. So
nice. Who was the coach then?
Smokey Joe Salem.
Wow.
Yeah, he was the coach, and we kept having injuries to the wide receiver core, and we kept having to move guys off the scout team up to – you know, the first or second team, and we just, by the end of the season, we had just basically run out of, you know, even with red shirts and whatnot, guys who could run scout team for the defense. For people who don't know, scout team is the group of people that mimics the other team's offensive defense, so when the team practice, they have an idea what the other team runs. So that was Wisconsin week. So I was running around as a Wisconsin wide receiver for that week.
Oh, wow. And they get lots of credit. Scout teams get lots of credit for getting teams ready. Because if they do a good job, they can get them ready for all sorts of things that the other team does.
Right. I mean, it's up to the coaches to watch the film. And that's most of the time that's some graduate assistant who's there for long hours watching the film, getting team tendencies on – what plays they run against certain defenses and whatnot, and then mapping out cue cards for the scout team to look at, break the huddle and run that play, and then go to the next one and next one to give the starting offense and starting defense an idea of what the other team's gonna be running. So,
when are you gonna have the manager or one of the co-players from your baseball team on?
That is in the future. I am actually now one of the co-managers, so I guess in a way.
Oh, cool.
Every day, every time I have a podcast, there's a co-manager on. But Mike is one of the few people who have actually gone and seen me play 35 and older baseball. Unfortunately,
yeah, that was the joy. Me and my old youngest son David went, and it was a great time. That was a fun game to watch, and you know, it was down in Richfield, and it was. I looked forward to the days of going back to games and seeing people play, and that was a fun. That was a great night. Yeah. Then we went to Dairy Queen after.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a Dairy Queen very close, but. Yeah, unfortunately, I was not in the hitting lineup that day, but in 35 and older and 50 and older baseball, everybody can play defensively without having to make batting substitutions. I think I may have gotten an at-bat late in the game. I don't recall.
Yep.
But
you batted late, and you also ran. You ran for the other first baseman.
Right, because he has two bad knees. And he's probably 150 pounds overweight for what he does, but he's still a pretty.
Yep.
He's when he doesn't play share when we don't share first base, he's also a pretty decent pitcher for our team. So.
Okay.
Which leads me to, I'm gonna take a quick break here, but it'll lead me to my QOTW, which this week. Will be the question of the week, and I'm going to ask it and then take a break. But during that break, I'm going to have Mike think about his answer. And the question of the week, the question of the week is, what would be your ultimate sports fantasy? So think about it, Mike, and think about it, listeners, and we'll be back in a minute here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast. Welcome back, and we're going to discuss the question of the week with my guest, Mike Bryant of Bradshaw & Bryant Law Firm. And the question of the week is, what is your sports fantasy? So, Mike, what would be your sports fantasy?
You know, there's a couple different ways I could take that. One of them, you know, is just to get back to going to games and not wearing masks and really appreciating it of any type of game. I mean, I just so much want to get back. And I think I've gone to so many games in my life and I've really truly taken them for granted considering what's happened. So that would be the... That would be the new one that's been created by our circumstance. I hope someday that we will get back to that. My ultimate sports fantasy, boy, I would go back and forth between suiting up for the Red Sox or suiting up for the Bruins. I mean, being in goal for the Bruins, you know, was like my goal in life, and that's really what I played was goaltender in hockey. But, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, boy, if you could put on the Red Sox uniform and run out to – probably right field. That would be the greatest. You know?
Right.
So I think that's probably what it would be. You know, I've had the opportunity. I've gone to the Super Bowl. I've gone to I've been to the Kentucky Derby. I've been to playoff games for the Timberwolves and the Celtics. I've been to hockey playoff games. So I've had a lot of opportunity to see a lot of incredible sports events. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back to some, you know, major sports events and hopefully seeing some of the teams that I really love win, you know. So that in the end is my daily, every new Red Sox season is another shot at that fantasy.
Right. No, for myself, and ours pretty much align with each other. This year, the year of COVID, 2020, I opted out of playing old man baseball, so getting back just out on the field and hanging out with the guys and not having to worry about wearing a mask, or is this person infected or whatnot, would be would just be a great release and relief. But I keep having this, and I actually have this dream that I'm at a St. Louis Blues practice taking shots in goal and making save after save after save, and then taking my mask off to have a crowd of high school classmates realize it was me in net. And
nice.
And having them be totally surprised that that it was me. But I would also like to go to St. Louis Cardinals fantasy camp. Now, unfortunately, this year of 2020, which has really sucked, two of the people I wanted to meet, Bob Gibson and Lou Brock, have passed away.
That's right.
And from what I understand, the Cardinals have a tiered fantasy camp where if you pay so much, you're in the camp and you get to hang out with the, you know, non-Hall of Fame players. And then if you pay more, then people like Brock and Gibson would, those are the type of people that you would have access to. So,
at this, wow. Me and Bob Gibson would be incredible. I mean, he had probably, I mean, he had arguably the greatest season any pitcher ever had. You know, Pedro's year during the steroids era was close.
Right.
But boy, that year that Bob Gibson had was unbelievable.
Well,
and then, you know, your Blues, you know, dream. I got to practice with the Rockies a couple of times when I was playing junior hockey out in Colorado.
Okay.
Those guys in the pros can shoot that puck.
Hold. Yes.
Rob Ramage, you know, whose kid played for Wisconsin, now he's in the pros. But Rob Ramage hit me with a puck in the chest that I think is the closest thing to being hit by a mortar shell as I've ever. It was unbelievable to get hit that hard.
Well, I played on a charity hockey team in town called Team Media, and we would go around the state and play charity games for whatever charitable reasons that the people asked us for, and there was a core sighting event, and I don't even know who put it on, but it was to raise money for inner city youth ice hockey. And Willie O'Ree came in town, and you know, he was the first black hockey player. He's Canadian, so I can't say African American.
Yep.
Canadian American, Afro Canadian. Yep. I'm sorry, to break the color barrier in pro hockey. Yeah, but I got a chance to meet him. He didn't skate, but he coached our team. And in pregame warmups, I was taking shots. And some of the guys on my team was like Mike Ramsey, who had played in the NHL for almost two decades and whatnot. And he took a shot that I caught in my catch glove, but I didn't catch it in the webbing. I caught it in the palm, and I caught the puck.
Ooh.
Did the fancy, you know, how goalies, you know, raise their own arm up to add a little mustard on it. Threw the puck in the corner, threw my glove off, skated in the corner, and there was the outline of the puck, red mark, on my hand. And I have never had a shot that hard in my life. And he didn't take a slap shot. He just took a
wrist shot
or a snap shot. And it was like having somebody just shoot me in the hand. It was the hardest shot I had ever. And he was known for that through the league. But it was like, my God, that hurt. So I guess in some ways, you know, because on that team, there were Olympians and former pros who were on that. So in some ways, I got to play with people. Also, Jesse DiBody of Ventura would show up every once in a while, and he had a hockey stick that had the world's largest blade on it because he was a terrible skater. I mean, his blade had to be about a foot and a half wide, you know, tall from the ice up, to protect the puck because he was such a god awful skater. But
I remember his interview when he got his hat trick. So, you know, and Vince, they threw chapeaus on the ice.
Chapeaus, hats, or Cats, yeah. Jesse.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fun, Mike. I appreciate you being willing to come on. I think you may have saw my post yesterday. Don't be afraid of a black man with a microphone, because I've reached out to a couple of people and they either haven't gotten back to me or they're basically telling me they're not getting back to me. But I think I would be respectful. I think I've been respectful here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great show. I've listened to it a number of times now, and it's been great to listen to, and I look forward to listening to more episodes.
Yeah, because you'll have to go back and listen this time to this one just to hear the music I actually played that you couldn't hear. That's the last bug I got to figure out with this. But I'm going to tell you something, Mike. It's been actually entertaining for me. But the other thing, it's been, I suffer from anxiety, and it's been a great relief and release for me to actually, I suffer not only from anxiety, but I also suffer from shyness, and which a lot of people take as me being standoffish or other things. It's just, I get very uncomfortable very fast with a lot of situations, and it's probably why I'm single, but that's another show for another day. But I found this to be quite a way for me to actually be able to talk and talk to other people. So again, I want to thank you for the motivation of the statement of, so do you have something to say? And I chuckled because I found now that I got something to say. And again,
it's been great.
All right. Well, thanks again. That's Mike Bryant of Bradshaw and Bryant Law Firm. If you're in need, please reach out to Mike. And again, that number is, Mike?
800-770-7008.
All right. And Merry Christmas to you, Mike, and Merry Christmas to the audience, because this will be the show before Christmas or leading to Christmas week. So have a wonderful holiday and Christmas, everybody. And thank you again for listening to the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
JB is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
I am Negro, Black, African American,
Black.
Django, JB.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven,
JB.
Our great Negro
sex machine.